Picture this, a recording studio somewhere far, far away.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience. This week, with a threatened dock strike, tube strike, rail strike, BBC strike and power strike, the country seemed to be slipping back alarmingly into the 1970s. As if realising this, the government were heard to cry,
"Does anyone know the way? Hear someone say? We just haven't got a clue.
And ominously, Ted Heath rose on the back benches and told the Commons,
"Things looked bad indeed. As the dock strike loomed ever closer, most of the country's imports were
sitting on the dock."
But what of the opposition? What are they doing about it all? What do you think, Paddy Ashdown?
When will I be famous?
Good question, Paddy. And Neil Kinnock's no better. He's worried about whether younger, hungrier Labour spokesmen are stealing his thunder. People like Gordon Brown. What do you say to that, Neil?
Just 'cause he's fat are looking at me. Just 'cause he's cool and trendy. But I know he's a moron. Gordon is a moron.
Ah, I see. So, the government continues unchecked.
And Transport Secretary Paul Channon, you've been looking into security at Britain's airports. What are they going to say if they spot a terrorist at Heathrow?
Walk on by.
Oh dear, Paul, looks like you could be for the chop. What are you going to tell the Prime Minister at the next Cabinet reshuffle?
Oh, Maggie, I couldn't have tried anymore.
Good idea. Ah, here comes Cecil Parkinson.
Man with the child.
What's this we hear about you planning to start privatising different parts of the day?
Sounds great, but we've just got time for a quick word from the editor of Sunday Sport.
Calling occupants of interplanetary craft.
Well, that's it. We'll play out with a new single from Princess Anne.
Now, Police 5 would like to show you these unusual tickets. They are for an illegal dogfight. Rabid Rover versus Black Fang. The tickets were found by the police last Wednesday, just 2 days before the fight was meant to take place. So I've rescheduled it for a week on Friday.
Now it's time for the Skint Video Experience. This week we'd like to do a song about us. I mean, obviously we're both sensitive, caring, right-on men. The sort of men who are not into intimate massage, but like ego massage.
That's right, we're not into self-abuse, but self-pity.
Now the ultimate self-pity in music has got to be country and western music.
So we'd now like to do a C&W ballad entitled New Men Only. Now every country and western song ever written in the history of popular music in the 20th century always starts like this.
Sitting here at the wine bar, crying into my Frascati. My wife, oops, sorry, my partner, called to say that she's just left me. The barman's very understanding, his caring attitude's a lifeline. 'Cause she wants a trial separation, and she just suggested a lifetime. 'Cause I'm a hard-thinking, barbecue-drinking kind of guy. I ain't never oppressed anyone in a dress, or at least I try. You can't have your quiche and eat it. That's what she said to me. You're a D-I-C-K-H-E-A-D. I don't drive no 16 turn. I prefer a metro. Oh, please, please, please forgive me just for being hetero. I'm trying to handle my maleness,
I've even tried hypnosis, but as my therapist says, it's been a good year for neurosis. Now I don't use words like bird, bit of skirt or fluff, although I often think them, not to say them seems enough. When women accuse me of token gestures and patronizing, I say yes, 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 of course, dear, can I help you with the ironing? 'Cause I'm a non-penetrating, macho-hating kind of guy. When I see the malice in my phallus, I really want to kiss it goodbye. I'm non-regressive, non-possessive, I'm into equality. But now she's gone, who's gonna cook my tea? Wash the dishes and clean the house for free. Yeah, but most of all, who's gonna listen to me?
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Picture this.
And now it's time for the Character Assassination Experience. This week we examine Colin Moynihan.
The main question one has to ask about Colin Moynihan is, why is he sports minister when you just take one look at him and know that at school he was the one that was always completely crap at sport?
Sir, I've got a note from my mother that says I can't play rugby because I've wet my pants.
Remarkably, even in the public school that he went to, Colin Moynihan had the stupidest surname in the whole school.
Now, at the age of 32, Colin Moynihan has the distinction of being the only cabinet minister who still hasn't passed puberty. One sees him on television wearing what seems to be a bar mitzvah suit. In fact, the original reason the authorities wanted to track down Pamela Bordes was on a charge of corrupting a minor.
Miss, miss, I've got a note from my mother that says I can't have sex because I've wet my pants. But I really want to join in.
Well, do you want to do French, Greek or Turkish?
Is there a computer science option?
Colin is, of course, very keen on the introduction of identity cards. This is mainly because his is the sort of identity which fits very easily on a 3x4-inch piece of plastic. In fact, his identity is a 3x4-inch piece of plastic. Fundamentally, Colin knows sod all about sport.
And now a question for Bill's team. Which... Sorry, just insulting Princess Anne there. Colin Moynihan. Really? The crowd getting carried away there. What sport is Frank Bruno associated with?
Computing?
No, that isn't actually a sport. So, which number do you want from the board?
Number ones, please.
Colin Moynihan's tragedy is really one of miscasting. He would have made such a good minister for train spotting. But as a politician, Colin does have one saving grace. He is remarkably clever in the way in which he can confound questions from even the toughest of political pundits.
So, Mr. Moynihan, what would you say to the recent claims that you're only in the cabinet on a YTS scheme?
I've got a note from my mother that says I can't do this interview because I've wet my pants.
Hello, and welcome to the Agony Aunt Experience. I'm Jo Brand, and I've been scanning the problem pages of newspapers and magazines again, firstly to see if anyone else has the same problems as me as far as relationships are concerned. But apparently nobody else does go sniffing round Broadmoor looking for a boyfriend. And secondly, to offer what I believe is completely unhelpful advice on problems. For example, from Weekend magazine. Dear David, I'm 18 and embarrassed by the bulge my personal parts make in my trunks when I go swimming. I feel the girls will laugh at me. Well, Mr. Big Packet, you have... I suggest you do what all the other boys do when they go swimming and take the rolled-up sock out of your wife, Francis. Next, we have a heart-rending problem for young girls from Jackie. Help, I'm just starting to use makeup. Can you give me some advice on how to use it properly? Well, first of all, I should say I don't believe in makeup being tested on animals because I think it just doesn't suit them, really. I've always had problems with makeup myself. My first attempts at it resulted in my very close resemblance to the Bride of Frankenstein. So I eventually decided recently to have a makeup lesson. I was actually dealt with by a recently formed fetus called Dawn. Whose first immortal words in makeup speak were, "Do you cleanse and tone?" Which roughly translated, I think, is, "Do you cleanse and tone?" And Dawn's attempt at making me up involved troweling a load of brown gunge and blusher onto my face. To put blusher on, you do actually need to find someone's cheekbones, I believe, and that was a bit of a problem with me. But we sent a potholing team down and got them eventually. Result, my new look, a recently deceased alcoholic. From the front page of Embalmers Weekly. After Dawn had actually added the finishing touches, eyeshadow, lipstick, etc., I looked very effective, really. But only for frightening children in the park. As this is one of my leisure activities, I decided to go for that look and ask for a list of the makeup. Well, the price of the makeup was about equal to how much it cost to buy a first division footballer. So I suggest to this woman who wrote in, if you're wearing makeup to get a man, don't bother, just buy Gary Lineker. On second thoughts, don't bother, just buy the makeup, I think. Thanks.
Tonight, the Mary Whitehouse Experience examines some of the consequences and ramifications of the controversial government move to ban certain prescribed organisations from receiving publicity on TV and radio. One such subversive organisation is International Rescue. In 1988, Douglas Hurd denounced this group as little more than a front for a sinister paramilitary operation involving rockets, high-tech underground drilling equipment, and personnel so secretive they insist on using other people's hands when filmed in close-up.
In his last interview before the ban took place, Mr. Jeff Tracy, the leader of the organisation, appeared on British TV making such controversial statements as,
"Come in, Penny. We've got a hot one for you."
Despite protests that denying International Rescue the right of reply would lead to fire flash not being able to land at Heathrow, rockets crashing into the sun and giant alligators running amok, the government claimed their decision to impose the ban was vindicated this week when Virgil was found to have been using Pod 3 of Thunderbird 2 to smuggle blowpipe missiles into South Africa.
Ask whether the Tracys were really the sort of people who would hide M16 rifles down their trousers, Mr. Hurd replied, "Why else do you think they walk like that?" The decision to prevent International Rescue from making public statements was easily achieved. The Home Office simply ordered that all their media interviews were to be done by brains.
Well,
This effectively imposed... this effectively imposed a blanket of silence.
The ban now looks set to be extended to cover all international terrorist groups. Critics claim that this will have alarming consequences for certain people.
Ah, good evening, Mr. Bond. Welcome to the headquarters of Spectre.
You'll never get away with this, Blofeld.
On the contrary, Mr. Bond. You see, normally at this point in the film, I would explain my master plan to you in great detail. But I'm not allowed to give our plans any publicity. So I'll just have to shove you straight into the shark pool. Number two, get me Mr. Hurd. Tell him he has done well.
So, where will it all end? The list of organisations who are banned from public pronouncements now include the RSPCA, IRN and the RSC.
I'm standing outside the Royal Shakespeare Theatre, where Mr. Hamlet has told the audience that he isn't sure whether he wishes to be or not to be,
and that is the question, though no one's allowed to ask him it. He is now helping the police with their inquiries concerning a cross-border consignment of slings and arrows. The rest of his speech I didn't understand.
There is no doubt that some innocent groups are suffering. A typing error in Whitehall meant that John Stalker was assigned to investigate whether there was a shoot-to-kill policy by the RAC.
Oh, thank heavens you're here. I think it's the distributor, although it could be that the carburetor's blocked, and I'm...
This week has seen the suspiciously enthusiastic commemoration of the centenary of Adolf Hitler's birth. One of the main points that has been made about Hitler's success as a politician is that he was a public speaker who valued style far above content. This is particularly clear in the following previously unbroadcast speech, for which we will be supplying a simultaneous translation.
Ihr alle seid Zeugen und Bürgen dafür.
Two Fat Ladies, 88. Housey, Housey.
Die aus allen Gauen des Reiches in diesen Stunden einmarschieren.
The NHS is safe in our hands.
Opferbereite und Opfergebildete. Kämpfer.
Hang on, Himmler's blown off everybody.
Die Mannführer haben Volkslos und Volksleid.
What's that, Himmler? He who smelt it, dealt it.
Um das deutsche Volk aus dieser seiner schwersten Niederlage herauszuführen.
What do you call a dog with no tongue?
Und es leisten schon am heutigen Tage. Sehen Sie in den deutschen Soldaten, die aus allen Gauen des Reiches in diesen Stunden einmarschieren. Sehen Sie in ihnen Opferbereite und Opfergewinnte, Kämpfer für des ganzen großen deutschen Volkes Einheit, dass jeder weitere Versuch, dieses Volk zu zerreißen, ein vergeblicher sein wird.
Smelly bollocks.
And the producer said to me, Ronnie, he said... He said to me, Ronnie, as he does quite often, you know, Ronnie. He said to me, Ronnie, stop following my daughter. You know, I digress. Well, I deviate. You know. Well, I do with his daughter, anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, Barbara Dixon, Mark Thomas.
Hello, everyone. My name's Mark, and what we do here is I go around the audience and discuss a topic of the week, and I'll be rushing around getting your views and opinions. With the 10 years coming up, we're celebrating the party of family life. And I thought it'd be quite interesting to talk about sex and the family. Can I just ask the women in the audience, how many actually think that, generally speaking, men make good lovers? Not one. There's a load of couples tonight that's going, why don't you put your hand up? Now, the weird thing is because, right, the government actually want the family to take over from the school in teaching their children sex education. The family, it's got to be told from the father to the son, or the mother to the daughter. The father to the son, though, what's he going to...
Well, you just sort of wiggle it about a bit, really. Sort of find the hairy bit and just wiggle about, you know.
For God's sake, my dad thinks the clitoris is a wine-growing region in Italy. Labia, and he goes, no, I won't buy them Russian cars. A few chaps sitting around going, well, what's the matter with that then? It's really weird though, because even the families who actually are competent and know things, they lie to you. You say, mummy, where do I come from? We found you under a gooseberry bush. Mum, we live in Peckham. If you find a gooseberry bush, it's because someone's burgled home base or the garden centre. You know, all these blokes go around the pub going, here, do you want to buy a gooseberry bush? No, thanks, I'm on the pill, you know. Stuff, you know. But the weirdest thing is at school, they just teach you the diagrams. They never teach you how to enjoy it. It's always what happens biologically. So I was sitting there at the age of 10. I'm looking at a picture of a penis in a vagina and the sperm coming out and getting to the egg and all this kind of stuff. And I'm sitting there thinking, how will I know when they're fully out? Eh? Because they're only tiny, aren't they? They could be wriggling up, they could take their time, stop for a cup of tea. I'm not going to know. I could be in there for hours just waiting for them to come out. They might come out already. I'll be just waiting for hours. 10 years later, you just wish you could be in there for hours. It's really, really weird because you find out all these brilliant and exciting things from the diagrams and you run home and you go, Daddy, 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 I've got a prostate gland. Have you? I've got Sonny Boy and a 340 at York. But the weirdest thing is that with the parent power and the moral majority, they're sort of thinking, well, we can't teach children sex. No, we can't. We can't, because it'll only encourage them. I can't speak for the women here, but the blokes, a school playground was just incredible. All these blokes running around going, oi, you done it yet? Hey, you done it yet? You still a virgin? I've done it loads of times with a music teacher. I've done it. This is at the age of 8. Well, you can go into any maternity ward in the country and all these kids going, quack, 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 and some are wanting their mothers and some are wanting their milk and some are going, here, you done it. It's really weird stuff. How many people here, just shout yes or no, right, or shout yes if you had sex before the age of 16, after 3 years. Everyone who had sex before the age of 16, shout yes, okay? 1, 2, 3. Okay, right. Does everyone know where they come from, babies? No, there must be people. Can I just ask a couple of people, what were their first sexual experiences like? Don't clam up, don't worry. You don't have to give me a blow-by-blow detail on this one. It's okay. Listen, can I just ask you, just say good or bad?
A catastrophe.
A catastrophe. Can I just ask you, just good or bad?
Bad.
Bad. Well, you see, do you generally get the feeling that sex wasn't actually brilliant? Because I actually think your first sexual experience is a little bit like your first kebab. It's overrated, it's over quickly, and you'd be better off with a portion of chips. Can I just ask people at random here, does anyone think that when we have sex education at school, that we should actually be taught how to enjoy it? Yes. Does anyone around here?
Sex therapists.
And what are they going to do?
No. School and the biology teacher said to us, I've been married about 3 months, but sex plays a very minor part in my life. Let's get on with the frogs.
Thanks very much. My name's Mark. Good night.
Picture this.
Now it's time for the punchline experience. Before the show, the studio audience were asked to come up with a punchline to the following joke. What did the BBC picket say to Terry Wogan to stop him crossing the picket line? Now, we've collected up all the punchlines on little bits of paper, which I have here in my hand. I'm going to read some of them now, and all the best ones will win a prize. A tin of Cowangate baby food. Right. Here we go. What did the BBC picket say to Terry Wogan to stop him crossing the picket line? Terry, your first guest is Salman Rushdie. That's by Hugh Dennis of Punt and Dennis. What did the BBC picket say to Terry Wogan to stop him crossing the picket line? If you stop touching people's knees, more money would be given in wages instead of legal fees. I like that one. It's by Adam Lee, but he got no laughs, so he could eat the tin of baby food. What did the BBC picket say to Terry Wogan to stop him crossing the picket line? I wouldn't bother going in, mate. You're only interviewing Jason Donovan and we've already kicked his head in. And that's by Tony, who doesn't appear to have a surname. It's probably Donovan. Don't cross the picket line, Terry. Right? That's from Mark Streeton, who hasn't really understood the whole concept of comedy. I think he wrote Laura and Disorder, actually. What did the BBC picket say to Terry Wogan to stop him crossing the picket line? If you cross our picket, we'll cut off your blankety blanks. That's by Dave Williams. Yeah, that's a good one. Excuse me, but this underground station is closed. All right. Yeah. That's by James Scott, who's apparently also Duke of Monmouth, according to... Right, so he's going to have his title revoked now. Okay, in my opinion, the winner was Tony with the assault on Jason Donovan joke, so can we please hear it for Tony, ladies and gentlemen?
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Picture this.
Now it's time for our weekly comedy series, All Cozy at Home in the Family House. Now, you may remember that last week 200 political prisoners were tortured in Chile. Two-thirds of the world's population went without food, and fatal holes in the ozone layer grew imperceptibly larger. But for Mr. and Mrs. Cozy and their brood, it's holiday time.
No, these tapes just won't do. Why don't we go away for our holiday this year?
Don't be silly, darling. We never leave the house.
Oh, yes, I forgot.
No, but hey, Father, I think you should take Mother away for a weekend break. We were saying that only the other day, weren't we, Sister? Nudge, nudge. Nudge, nudge. Nudge, nudge.
No.
Yes, we were. We want to get you out of the house so we can have a wild drugs party.
What was that?
Oops, I just said, we don't want to get the bile rugs nasty.
Oh, that's all right. I thought you said, we want to have a bile nugs party.
Well, I thought he said, can we have a Giles Slugs crafty?
I'll get it.
Hello.
Hello, Vicar.
I hope you're feeling well.
What was that?
I said, I cope your ceilings hell.
Oh, that's all right, then.
Well, must be off now, then.
What was that?
I said, you're a fat poof now.
Oh, that's all right, then. For a moment there, I thought you said my wife does it for money. Goodbye. Oh, all right, Mother, I suppose it is roundabout now in the series that we go off for a weekend break to try and enliven our tired old sex life.
Oh, yes, it'll be like a second honeymoon. Why don't we go back to exactly the same place as we went to 25 years ago?
Well, darling, here we are. Shall I turn the light off?
Yes.
Oh, darling, it feels just like it did 25 years ago, doesn't it?
Well, no, actually, it's more sort of wrinkled and floppy than it used to be. Such a shame they had to knock down the hotel and build the M4.
Yes, I wonder how things are getting on back home.
Hello, Sister. The party's great. Let's dance.
But supposing we smash that vase?
Oh, all right, then.
Oh, no, that was Mum and Dad's wedding present to Edie Armin.
Hello.
Oh, hello, Vicar. Come on in.
Oh, thank you. I hope you don't mind. I've brought a guest.
No, of course not.
Good. You know the Winchester chapter of the Hell's Angels, don't you?
Well, darling, I suppose we are better off in a trust house fort, eh?
Yes. 57 dead is quite enough for one night.
Yes. What a pile-up. There was no chance of me getting back to sleep after all that.
I don't feel very sleepy either, darling.
I wonder how things are getting on back home.
Would anyone like some more pomade?
Oh, dear, I hope we can get all this mess cleared up before Mother and Father get home.
What on earth is going on?
Mother, Father, we didn't think you'd be back till late Sunday night.
Clearly. Well, it's damn lucky that we came back early, because our attempt to revive our flagging love life was constantly thwarted by a series of comic mishaps involving uncomprehending room service, sexually noisy people in the room above, and the discovery that our neighbour was staying at the same hotel with his Swedish au pair. None of them funny.
Oh.
Now get this lot out of here. Thank God we've got the place to ourselves again.
Darling, shall we go upstairs and give it just one more go?
All right then, darling. Here we are. Vicar!
That's a hamster!
Uh-oh, how will the vicar get out of this one? Probably with the aid of some KY jelly and a pair of tongs. Tune in and find out next week in All Cozy at Home in the Family House.